First of all, thank you for inviting me. I think one of the things that I'll get to it in detail later on, but I think there's a big mitzvah in taking what happens to us and learning from it, and not just letting it pass by. And I think that's part of when I was a student in yeshiva, and Rosh Yeshiva that I learned in Hesder and Efrat, and Rosh Yeshiva, we spoke about a lot of the fast. What's so special about a fast day? Why do we have to fast on it? And why stop eating? Can't do other things, maybe do more davening. We have a little more davening in Slichos of lighting, but the fact that we don't eat, why is it such a critical and major part of the fast? And the answer that was given is that it really makes us stop our lives from the regular way of living. Because life without eating is very different than life with eating. It's not natural to not eat. It's something we do every single day. If somebody misses a day of eating, it means something really, really abnormal happened to them that day, that they missed all the meals. And it basically gives us a message to stop and think about what has happened, what is happening, and what can we do with that information. So I'm going to tell you a little about what happened in that day in Arnof, but I want to start with questions which are related to today and to what happened. You know, one of the things that came up during the Shiva, one of the questions which there is no answer to, but it's important sometimes to ask the question, even though we won't have an answer, but we can learn from it. And the same question relates to today, which is also, I don't know if I'm sure you're aware of it, it's designated as Yom HaKadosh HaKadi, the general day of Kaddish for all those who were killed in the Holocaust, or the religious aspect of the Holocaust Day. I'm sure you spoke about it, right? That this is, it was mentioned. In Israel, this is the day where it's also considered the day where we remember the Holocaust. And the same question that was asked, that has been asked many, many times, I'm going to ask about what happened that day in Arnof. A terrible thing happened there, and it brought back memories of and visions of pogroms of in a shul where people are davening and the way what happened there and so on. I'm not getting into graphic details, but it caused people to think about the Holocaust. And the question that comes up is, how could Hashem allow this to happen? I mean, people davening in shul, talis and tefillin, to enable this terrible thing to happen while they're serving Hashem at the highest possible place. Now we don't go to Har HaBayit, but in a shul, while they're davening Shmoneh Esrei, they're in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, the silent prayer. And it's a question which the answer is much harder than the actual question. And I'll tell you I'll start out, I won't keep you in suspense. The answer is we don't know. We just don't know, but it doesn't mean that we can't ask the question. Hashem has his cheshbonos and his ways of how things happen, but we can try and understand a little more about what it means to us. What can we take from it? The same way, what are we taking from this day of fasting which stops our lives? So what can we take from it? So first I want to start in finding out a little more what happened that day. And I don't know if you know of all the stories, but I'll tell you a little bit. I'm sure some of it you've heard, some not. But what didn't happen that day? Let's start with that. Typically in the shul in Har Nof, in that shul, that minyan, the 630 minyan, there are anywhere between 35 and 40 people on a regular basis. That morning, there were 25, which means 10 to 15 people, about a third, didn't come to shul that morning to that minyan. Which is odd, because it wasn't normal. And where were those people? So during the Shiva, we heard many, many stories of individuals, why they weren't there that morning. And I'll tell you a few of them. There was one older man who was disabled, that his son used to bring him every single day to shul, drive him to shul. And he was away that week. He was out of town, and he organized, the older man organized a taxi to take him every single day instead of his son. And the taxi driver, the same taxi driver, and he did. He took him on Sunday and Monday. Come Tuesday morning, taxi driver didn't show up. He didn't show up. He wasn't there at the minyan. Now, At that point, he was a little upset the taxi guy didn't show up, but he realized, had he been in the shul that day, he probably would not have survived, because some of the people, and I'll explain a little how, some of the people, a lot of the people actually, managed to escape from the shul and weren't hurt, at least not physically. Out of the 25 people that were there, about 11 were either injured or killed. It means another 14 managed to escape, or hide or escape, because the terrorists were in the shul for about 25 minutes, which is a very, very long time. And they had enough time, in theory, to 25 minutes is a long time to kill people. I mean, usually terrorist attacks, they happen within a minute, 2 minutes, and it's over with. 3 minutes, it's 25 minutes. A lot of people were able to escape. Had this elderly man been in the shul, he would not have been able to escape. Now, he sat on the right side of the shul. And he has makom kavua, his permanent place where everybody knew this is the place where he davens. And that morning, one of the people who typically davens on the left side of the shul saw this place empty, and he decided to daven there. He doesn't know why. He told me this. He's in the shiva, sat right in front of me. He says, I don't know what made me decide to sit in that place where the elder man usually sits. But I sat there, I thought that if he shows up, then I'll move to my regular place. And he was on the right side of the shul. The fact that he was on the right side of the shul and not on the left side where he usually was, probably he was able to, his life was also saved. Because the people that, or at least he wasn't injured. All the people that were killed or injured were on the left side of the shul. Except for my brother, who was in the left, but more towards the center, towards the bima. Why did the terrorists choose the left side? I don't know. We have no idea. But interesting enough, on the right side of the shul, in the front of the right side of the shul, if you ever go there and look, there's a door. Make believe this is the shul. This is where the Aron Kodesh is. On the right side, there was a door, like a fire escape door, or some kind of escape door, which nobody ever used. But at that morning, all the people that are on the right side of the shul, they all managed to escape through that door. All the ones that weren't injured and weren't hurt. So that person, he was saved because he was on the right side of the shul and was able to get out. Those are two people. One of the people who usually came to the meeting every single day, he has a Down syndrome child. And when this child was born years ago, he came to Kanievsky and asked for a bracha. And of course he gave a bracha, but he also told him that this child will be some sort of shmira for you. It'll guard over you in some way, which at that point, this person had no idea a Down syndrome child, what could he? He didn't come to shul that morning because of his son that had Down syndrome. For whatever reason, I'm not sure the details. And because of that, he was not in that shul. There's a kohen, he used to daven in that shul every single day, and I'm sure you're aware of that. In Israel, kohanim, they duchen every day. They do pikas kohanim. And he heard that a different minyan didn't have a kohen that morning. The kohen that usually was there wasn't going to be there, so he decided to daven a different minyan, even though he usually davened in that minyan. So he also wasn't there. Rav Rubin, the rabbi of the shul, he usually davened that minyan. He also, for whatever reason, he didn't wake up that morning, waked up late, wasn't feeling good. He didn't come to that minyan, even though usually he was there. On the other hand, somebody who never davened in that minyan, he was there that day, and he was one of the people that were killed, of Kamen Levin. He never davened in the shul that day, in that shul, that minyan. He was typically part of a different minyan. He came to that minyan that morning, because he had a question he wanted to ask Rav Rubin, who's Chashav Posek, the Rav of the Shul. He wanted to ask him a question. So he decided, I'll come daven in the minyan, and then after davening, I'll go ask him the question. And for whatever reason, he was there that day, and he was one of the people that were killed. What I'm trying to get at is that Hashem has his ways of making things happen. And whoever was supposed to be in the shul that day was in the shul that day. Whoever wasn't supposed to be in the shul that day wasn't. Within the shul, those who were supposed to be injured were injured, those who were supposed to be killed were killed, and those who were supposed to be survived. Why? I don't know. None of us can know. We don't know why, but we clearly Hashem, I believe that Hashem's Hashgacha decides who is going to be when and where, and definitely in this kind of situation, and where it's, we're talking about life and death. Hashem decides, and specifically about the ones who were killed. So this is something which is well known. I mean, it's not, I'm not giving any chiddush here, that anybody who dies, who was killed because they're a Jew, then it's considered they died a kiddush Hashem. Definitely if they died while davening and while they're doing a mitzvah of davening and have tas and tefillin on. I mean, you have it all mixed together. I mean, doing a mitzvah, you're davening, and you're killed because you're a Jew. And it says that the people who died Kiddush Hashem are very, very high place, very special. And this is true about people from the Holocaust as well. That they're in a place, and this was also, many Rabbanim said this in the Shiva, that they're in a place which is no, any creation can be, come close to. Even the biggest Talmidei Chachamim don't reach the level of the ones who died Kiddush Hashem. And to the point, even the Big Rabbanim wanted to daven Kiddush Hashem. They wanted that to be part of what was their existence, to have the schus to daven Kiddush Hashem. The most famous one is Rabbi Akiva. If you are familiar with the famous story, Rabbi Akiva, he went against the decree of the Romans, and he taught Torah in public, and they caught him, and they decided, and he had the decree of punishment of death, and they combed his body with cones of steel. And while he was at the very end, he was saying the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And the students asked him, "What? Even to this level, you still? I mean, you're about to die. Now you're saying Shema. What's the? I mean, what?" And he said, "My whole life, I was waiting to fulfill the continuation of what it says in Shema. V'avta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha v'chol nafshecha afilo noteret nafshecha." My whole life, I was waiting to the time where I'll have this chus to fulfill what it says, even if it means taking your life. And now that I'm zochet to it, I'm not going to use the opportunity to get closer to Hashem and to realize this is what I want. This is the way that I can get closest to Hashem possible. And he said the Shema at that time. And so Rabbi Akiva, who was the Gdol Ador of his nation, one Torah Sheba'al Peh is all from him, his students that he passed on and so on. But For him, the dying al Kiddush Hashem, the Afilu Noteret Nafshecha, was something that he was striving for. And Hashem gave it to him. But it's not something that we can choose. We can't choose to die al Kiddush Hashem. We can maybe want it. We can hope for it. We can say, I'm willing to commit myself to it. But we don't choose to die al Kiddush Hashem. Then Hashem chooses. There's another famous Rav who wanted, and it was clear, it's brought down. I mean, Masorah, the stories. Rabbi Yosef Kau, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, he wanted to daven Kiddush Hashem also, but he wasn't zochet to get it. It's not something that Hashem gave him. One of the things that Rav Rubin, the Rav of the Shul, and I wasn't there when he said it, but I read things that he wrote afterwards. He said that we can't reach the level of the dying of Kiddush Hashem unless Hashem chooses it. But the fact that we are willing to give ourselves up at that point. In other words, we're willing to daven Kiddush Hashem. That gives us a bit of that level. In other words, that we're able to come close to it, or at least emulate it in some way. That we're willing to give ourselves to daven Kiddush Hashem, if the opportunity comes, which we don't hope it'll come. I mean, we don't want to die. I mean, Rabbi Akiva, well, he was fortunate that when it happened to him, do you know how old he was? Any idea? He was 120. At the age 40, he lived a whole new life. From 40 to 120, he lived 80 years. That's when he started learning Aleph-Bes at 40, and he lived to 120. And at 120, that's at least according to Masorah that I heard, that's when he died. So he had a full life. But and the end of it was when Hashem chose it, and it worked out for him. Now, Kiddush Hashem is something, as I said, we can't pick to daven Kiddush Hashem. Then Hashem does, and again, Hashem has his chesbonos. But there is something we can do. And this, I'm getting back to what maybe the fast day, or maybe the this whole event could teach us. Now, I'm not going to say, I'm going to tell you who told me this. So, anybody who says something in the name of who said it, then you bring Gula, which we need nowadays very much. I'm sure you've heard of the Fogel family, the Ruth Fogel and husband and children. So her father, Ruth Fogel's father, is his name is Rav Ben Yishai. The children, the survived children, are now living by him. The grandparents took them. So he came to the Shiva. And he said, you know, what I just told you, the Kiddush Hashem, who dies the Kiddush Hashem that Hashem chooses? But it doesn't end with that. The Kiddush Hashem, how it's defined, even the Kiddush Hashem that happened in the shul is defined also by what happens afterwards. In other words, you can have somebody who gets killed in a terrorist attack, and then what can come afterwards could be a lot of anger, rage, revenge, and fighting back, and taking it to a certain area, which some people have done, which I'm not judging them. Or you can take it, and this is what he said, what he says you should do, is take it to continue the Kiddush Hashem in some way. And the Kiddush Hashem doesn't end with those died, it continues with those who live on. Now he was specifically talking about the family. And he said, he as a family member, and he was talking to me as a family member, he says, now, there's a big responsibility now for those who survived to deal with the family. The ones who, and this is something that happened to you, how do you relate to what happened? How are you going to relate to your parents who lost their son, to your sister-in-law and their children who lost their husband and father? Are you going to be, I mean, this is the time where the family has to come in. Now I want to take what he said to another level. Now one thing unique about this terrorist attack, any terrorist attack that happens to any Jews, it's very sad and everybody, we all feel it. But there was something unique about this which was even more powerful and had a lot more effect in all over the Jewish community. And that is, because of where it happened and how it happened and when it happened, I mean, the terrorists chose, they were in the shul for a good 10 minutes before they did anything. They were waiting there. And they waited till the Shmon Arsay. They waited till they were in the Shmon Arsay, and that's when they decided to attack. It was an attack not just against the people in the shul. They were the ones that were there. But clearly, the intention of the terrorists was an attack against the Jewish nation. It was clearly. I mean, they didn't have anything against those specific people. They had something against what the Jewish nation represents, what our existence. And more than that, is with an attack against the connection between us and Hashem. The fact that they chose to do it in the shul while they had Tazen Fanan, while they were davening. They were in the car, they could have killed, and Baruch Hashem, they didn't do this. They could have killed kids outside the shul or going to school or walking around. I mean, they chose in the shul during davening. And I think that's why it had such an impact on the Jewish community and Jewish world all over the place. Because I think everybody felt it wasn't just an attack against them, it was an attack against us, against all of us. And because of that, I think the question of Kiddush Hashem, the continuing Kiddush Hashem, doesn't just end with the circle of the family. It goes on with the whole Jewish community, the Jewish nation. And the question is, how can we take the Kiddush Hashem that Hashem decided upon those who were killed and continue it amongst those living? So one of the answers is, let's see who the people that Hashem chose and a little bit about them and try and emulate them and see this. If Hashem chose these people, then apparently there's something special about them, and therefore let's try and be like them, and then we're continuing the Kiddush Hashem, we're continuing what they had in this world. And I'll formulate it in a different way to understand it. Acheli Franke, I'm sure you've heard of the name. She spoke here once. Yeah. I think I read somewhere that she spoke here. She may have told you what I'm about to tell you now. I was in Makor Chaim before Shana. My son learns there. That's the high school where the two of the out of the three were from. So she came to the high school and she spoke to the parents and to the students. And she was standing in the Beis Medrash. And she said a lot of very, very powerful things, but one thing which really stood out, she pointed to a chair in front of her. It was very, very close to the Aron Kodesh, which was, nobody was sitting in there. The whole place was full. She actually sat in that chair when she got up to speak. She said, "This chair is the chair where my son used to sit, the son that was killed. And this chair is now empty." She said, "Now, my son and the other ones that were killed, they're in a good place. I'm not worried about them. They're close to Hashem. But here, right now, in this Beis Medrash, there's a void. The Torah learning that my son and the other one did, the mitzvos, the chesed, that's no longer here." And she said, "It's up to you," speaking to the students of the Beis Medrash, "it's up to you to fill that void, to fill what's missing. That each and every one should take upon themselves something which could, in some way, continue what they were doing, so they shouldn't be lost." And I think that's something that any of us can do. And now, what she said at the time was to take upon yourself something new, which is very, very important, and but it's not always that easy to do something totally new that you've never done before. Which, if you can do that, ashaych, it's great. I want to take what she said and take it a notch easier. And that is, you're doing something already, try and do it better. In other words, you're davening. We all daven every day. And they attacked us during Shmona Esrei. That's what the attack was, the terrorists. They were shot people while they're in the middle of Shmona Esrei. Take Shmona Esrei. Take the first bracha of Shmona Esrei and decide, you know what, I'm davening anyway. According to Shmona Esrei, you have to have kavana at least in the first bracha. So I'm going to, from now on, I take it upon myself that the first bracha of Shmona Esrei, I'm going to be mechaver. I'm going to have kavana. I'm going to think about every word that I say. The rest, if I can, I can. Like, nah. But at least the first one, I'm going to make sure. We're talking about davening that you're doing anyway. So investing a little more thought into it gives you another minute to davening. So it's a minute of your life. And if you daven mincha, it's 2 minutes. If you daven ma'ariv, it's 3 minutes. 3 minutes a day. And that's something that you can take upon yourself and you can do till you reach 120. That's one example. Another example about chesed. We do chesed all the time. Right? Let's do the chesed that we do anyway in a little better. And I want to tell you something which relates to this from this week's parasha. You know, Yosef is asked by Yaakov Avinu. The pasuk says, I want to read it because I want to quote it. Vayikrivu yimei Yisrael amot, vayikra livno Yosef, vayomer lo, imna matzati chen beinecha, simna yadcha tachad yerechi, vasita imadi chesed veemet, al natik vreni mitzrayim. Right, that's what the pasuk says. Now, an interesting connection of two words, chesed veemet. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Rashi. Rashi says, what's chesed veemet? Chesed shel emet. That if you do chesed to somebody who dies, then you don't expect to get anything back. And that's a true chesed. It's chesed shel emet, that there's no return. Now, Rashi says chesed shel emet, it's not exactly the what the words say. It's chesed v'emet. It's two things. So, in a different place, the Rav Shimon Farhish, he talks about it when the same two words are together with Eliezer. When he goes to for Rivka to see to try and find a wife for Yitzchak, and she does everything with the well, the water, and takes all the water for the camels also, and she says who she is. She's the daughter of Betuah. So he says, "Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham, Asher lo azav chasdo va'amito meim Adonai." That Hashem, he thanks Hashem for not leaving or not forgetting the chesed emes towards Avram. And the Shimon Farhish says, there was the chesed emet. He said, chesed is an act that we, as human beings, sometimes cannot do in perfection. Because sometimes we do it too much or not good enough. Or, like, let's say, if you give a young child money, or a poor young child money, he's not going to know what to do with it. It's a chesed that's going to bring, it's not going to do him any good to give him a lot of money. He's going to lose it, he's going to use it for things he shouldn't need. Hashem, when Hashem does chesed that has the emes in it. It's an act of chesed, it's also an act of emes. And that's always, whenever Hashem does chesed, that's how he does it. We, as human beings, when we do it for somebody who dies, then it clearly is chesed shel emet. But throughout our lives, we should strive that the chesed should be chesed that has an act that also is an act of emes. Which isn't that easy, because we always have our personal gain, our thoughts, what, I mean, why are we doing this? People are going to make me think I'm a good person, I feel good about it, next time they'll do it for me. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why we think maybe I want to do it because of the schos that I get. I mean, there's a lot of things, maybe some of things may be good reasons. But the chesed with the emes combined is a very high level. But that's something that we can try and strive for. When we do chesed, let's try and do it in a way of emes, in a way of it's truthfully, the best way of chesed we possibly can. You know what? Chesed, if we give it with a smile, it becomes even better. If we do it, look for it. Let's try and find the chesed. Now, I want to tell you a few stories of my brother. Why am I so involved with chesed more than others? Because that's one of the things that about my brother that was mentioned many, many times, many stories. I mean, I knew my brother as a brother. And I knew the way, I mean, his personality, his kids, the family, and he was always there. But I heard so many amazing stories about him during the Shiva from his community. And they said he was a true Ish Chesed. And he was like the Ish Chesed of the community. And I'll tell you a few stories about him, which in some ways I can learn from him how to do Chesed. First of all, when you approached him, you saw him, I don't know if you saw pictures of him, he had this big radiant smile, made people feel warm just by meeting, just by, hello, how are you doing? A big smile, like warmth that radiated from him. And immediately asked, is there anything I can do for you, any way I can help you out? And he really meant it. He didn't say it just to be nice. And if anybody really needed anything, then he would stop what he was doing and go help that person. He used to search out ways to do chesed. He used to try and find how can he help somebody else. One of the most powerful examples is on Shabbos morning. Most people on Shabbos, what do? They sleep late and they go to a later minyan. I usually go to minyan every day at 6, but on Shabbos I go at 8:30 or 8:45. My brother, on Shabbos morning, he used to go every single day to Vasikin. That's the sunrise, the early davening. And he used to, and why? So he can finish davening early. Now, why do you want to finish davening early? Not to go home and go to sleep and have his meal. After davening, he used to search. He actually worked on this before, and on Friday he did research, but he used to go to a place where there's a kiddush. I mean, some shuls have a kiddush this week, some that week. And he used to search, where's there a kiddush that week? I don't know if you're aware of, in some places in America where you come from, they have kiddush every single Shabbos is a kiddush. In Israel, it's usually not like that. There has to be a reason. If you have a bar mitzvah, nufruf, then there's a kiddush. Usually some sort of family simcha. He used to go to help them in the kiddush. Usually in shuls in Israel, the people who do the kiddush are the family themselves. They don't, it's not most places. I mean, sometimes you get a catered kiddush, but it costs a lot of money. Usually the family buys the food and people help them organize it. My brother, every single Shabbos, he dedicated his Shabbos morning to help people, wherever there's a simcha in Harnof, to help them in the kiddush. And whether he knew them or not, he didn't make a difference. He used to get there before they started, set up tables, set up chairs, help distribute the food to platters. During the kiddush, refilling the platters. After the kiddush, cleaning up, folding the chairs, folding the tables, and sweeping the floor. And people who were in the shiva, who were friends of my brother, they heard other people saying the story. They said, we thought he only did it for us as his friend, but now they heard that he did it for everybody. He did it for anybody, whoever he, and that's what he did. He was so machpid on Shabbos morning to get up at Nates at the sunrise, so he should be able to do this chesed. Another thing that he did, which was well known in the community, he used to, I don't know, the crosswalks in Harnof. If you've ever been to Harnof, there's a lot of cars and the kids walk to school, and which is something I noticed there, which is very nice. I mean, I've been there more lately. Kids, if they come to a crosswalk, they don't cross the street, especially young kids, unless an adult takes them across the street, or a car stops and then lets them cross. Unless that happens, they're instructed to stand there and wait. And so now whenever I drive and I see kids, I always stop, because I know if I don't stop, they're gonna wait there for a few minutes. But my brother used to, every single morning, he used to help kids cross the street and cross them back and forth so they can get to school. And he wasn't appointed by anybody, and they didn't have any who had this position. That's one thing that he did. He decided to do this. He's going to help the kids cross the street. During the month of Adar, I don't know if those who were Shana Bet, then you'd probably know that in Israel, the month of Adar is not just Purim, the few days. It starts from Rosh Chodesh and goes on. And those who are not, you'll get to see it soon. Purim in Israel is not one day. It's not 2 days. It's like 2 weeks. And he used to dress up, my brother, as a clown in the month of Adar and give out candies. And also to help make the kids, bring some simcha to the kids in the month of Adar. He added something unique in the past 2 years to this candy distribution, where he, I don't know if you heard, but he lost a daughter 2.5 years ago. She died in her sleep. She was almost 14. They don't know why. And it was very, very hard for him and the whole family. But he decided not to take this tragedy and bring, even though it was very sad for him, and many, many times we saw how it affected him, but he decided he's not going to let him take him down. He's going to grow from it and do more. And so he decided he's going to do more chesed. And one of the things that he did, he gave out candies in the month of Adar. He printed out wrappers for candies, which said that the bracha for this candy should be the neshama of Chaya Chana, his daughter. And he wrapped each candy with another wrapper which said on this, and he gave out hundreds of candies during the month of Adar. And again, so that he took the tragedy of his daughter's death and moved it to something joyous. Another thing that he did was he came up with this idea of a gmach, a loan organization of freezers. In Har Nof, people have, as everywhere else, people have like a family occasion where they have a simcha or something. And some people, I don't know, have the money to get a caterer, and a lot of people do the simcha themselves. They cook the food ahead of time for the whole Shabbos or for the event, and they need freezer space to store it because they can't cook it all at once. So they cook it over time, the cakes, whatever, and they store it in the freezers. And when the Shabbos comes, whatever the event comes, they take it all out. So my brother thought of this idea that he's going to loan out freezers for the people for the time they have a simcha. They can have it a few weeks before or a week or two afterwards. And he did this in the name of his daughter, the neshama of his daughter. And he wasn't a man of means, my brother, and he took out a loan to buy the freezers. And hopefully he'll return it. And he didn't charge any money for the freezers. He didn't, it was totally free. People who wanted to donate to the gemach could, but they weren't obligated to. And not only that, he took the freezers from place to place. He didn't have a car. He had a cart where he used to take them from one house to another. He never had to store them because there was such a high demand on the freezers that he just, as soon as one family finished it, the next family already wanted it. And I saw the calendar that he had during the Shiva, we're going over the Gemach. It was way past Purim already. All the freezers were already taken, like going from this family to that family and so on. Once, one of the people who were saw him moving the freezers, he says, why don't you tell the family that wants to use it? They should come pick it up. Or when they finish it, they should move it. One of the things. He said, no, I want the families to have, I want it to be total chesed. They shouldn't have to worry about it. They should enjoy the freezers without having any headaches upon them. And it's my mitzvah, I want to do it totally. And so he used to schlep it. He wouldn't let anybody else do it. He did it all totally by himself. When one family finished, he took it from one family to the next. One thing which I witnessed in the Shiva, and afterwards I actually experienced in the Shloshim, I experienced it on myself. I mean, I told this story. I was in the States, and I spoke after the Shiva. I was all over the place, 20 different places where I spoke. And I told this story, and now I can, after that, I had the opportunity to try and live up to what my brother was as well. During the Shiva, there were hundreds and hundreds of people who came, and every day. And at some point, we put a notice that we asked that people come until 9:30. One evening, towards the end of the Shiva, there was a guy that was upstairs, and he was the last person left in the Shiva, and talking to my sister-in-law Yaakova, Ari's wife. I was in the kitchen getting something to eat, and I overheard them talking. Now, I'm sure you've met these kinds of people throughout life, or heard of them, or seen them. There's certain people that are a little socially inadequate, where they don't know when to stop talking, or at one point to say, all right, good night, or, and they go on and on and on and on, and they don't always know the right thing to say. And so he was talking to my sister-in-law, and he was crying, he was tearing, and said, the only person that would listen to me was Arye. And I know that I speak a lot, and I talk and talk and talk, but he was always there. He never made me feel in any way that I wasn't welcome or they didn't have time for me. And I could go on, and he did there as well. And he said, who's gonna listen to me now? During the shloshim, at the end of the shloshim, we had a siyum and had speeches, whatever, at the night after the shloshim. And again, we're already cleaning up and finishing. I was like, I'm on my way with my family. I don't live in Arnof. I live in Gush Etzion. Okay. I was like, why don't you get home? It's already late. And this guy, the same guy, approaches me and he starts talking to me. And I can tell you, without 25 minutes, this guy was going on and on and on, like different things that he had to say and over again. And it takes a lot of patience. And you have to be able to put everything aside and dedicate your attention and really and make him feel welcome, which is not easy. But my brother did it naturally. That was his life. I was zochet to do it once. And it's something which it's not a simple thing. It really isn't. I'm sure if you ever reach that point where you have that, you should be zochet to the nisayon shouldn't be too hard for us. Doing something special of chesed at the highest level, in chesed shel emes, not just the people who died, we can try and do it with people around us, which is also a tremendous thing. I think that if we can't answer why Hashem did it, we can answer what can we learn from it, though, or what can we take from it. And it's true about the Holocaust, it's true about this terrorist attack, and it's true about anything that happens to us. We can't say, when something terrible happens to us, even in our personal life, we can't say, this happened because of this. Anybody who says that, he has to be a Navi, and no Nevuah nowadays. You can't say, the reason why I broke my leg is because of this and this. But we can say, maybe I can learn from it to do something better in some way. Or think, where can I improve myself? Maybe it's there's always some sort of message from Hashem that we can be better. We can always be better. And sometimes it's like Hashem is giving us a wake-up call. Where can we do better? And as a nation, I mean, I'm not talking, what I spoke now is individually, where can we do things? We can in tefillah, in chesed, acting towards other people. As a nation, where can we do better? Which is also a question. This happened again. This terrorist attack was to a nation. And talking about Asar B'Tevis today, what happened the time of the Churban, what can we do better? So I want to tell you something. I have a few minutes. I want to tell you another story that came up from during the Shiva, which can answer that at a certain level. My son, as I mentioned, he learns in Makor Chaim in the high school where the kids that were kidnapped from. They have every Thursday night a Mishmer. You know what Mishmer is? Do you have it here also? Yeah, Mishmer. Good. So their Mishmer, each Mishmer in each place is unique. Their Mishmer, they have learning, obviously, and they also have, as any good Mishmer, you have something to eat, so they have some good chicken soup. I don't know what you have, but whatever, they have chalent. Okay, so they have a good chicken soup. But they also have two other things, which are maybe exist in other places, but by them, it's like really part of the Mishmer. They have what they call a Seder Nigunim. There's a certain part, Seder, you know what Seder is, right? Seder, where they sing, they go like in a certain area, and they sing songs more like uplifting songs like Shashuddha's kinds of songs. That gives them a little more energy. And there's something else that they do, which is they have a Seder Rikudin, where they dance during the Mishmer. Usually this goes like when people are getting droopy, whatever, it's getting tired. So they get up, they bring some musical instruments, and they dance to upbeat songs similar to ones you would sing probably in Simchas Torah or in Purim. To get them like more energy, they dance around and they sing, they give kach to each other, and they go back to learning and have more strength to continue on learning. So my son comes to me during the Shiva, and he says, I really want to go to the Shiva for Mishmer. It's very important. It's a special time. But and I learning is definitely, and the nigunim definitely, but the rikudim, the dancing with the music, it's really not appropriate that I do that while you're sitting shiva, while Sam and Safter are sitting shiva, and my aunts and uncles and my cousins are sitting shiva. It's not appropriate that I go dancing around the Beis Medrash. And he's right. So you leave in the middle. So I told him, I thought about it for a minute or two, and I said, there is one song that if they sing, even if they dance, and even if they have a little bit of music, it's a song which would be appropriate. And it's a song which had a tremendous impact on me. The time and place of where I sang it. And I said, I'll tell you where it's from, and if you sing it that night in the Mishmar, then it'd be appropriate. This goes back 6.5 years ago, or 7.5 years ago, I'm not sure. I'm sure you heard of Gush Katif, right? The Gaza Strip, there used to be Jewish communities there. One of the communities was Neveit Karin. My brother-in-law, my wife's brother, lived there. And I was there the day after Tisha B'Av. I was there with Tisha B'Av as well, but the day after Tisha B'Av, it was clear that it was only a matter of time when the surrounding soldiers and police around the community are going to come in and take them out. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. But, and it actually did happen on Wednesday, 2 days later. But this is Monday morning. In the Beit Kanin, they decided to dedicate a new mikvah that they were building already for quite a while. A mikvah you don't build in one day. It sometimes takes years. So you get the money, so the planning, especially in this country. And they finished the mikvah that day, Monday morning, and they dedicated it. And another thing that they had also, which didn't happen just then that day, is something that they were doing for a very long time, a Sefer Torah that was written to be brought into one of the shuls, a new Sefer Torah, a dedication of Sefer Torah. And they did them both on that day. And people asked, like, why are you doing this? I mean, what's the point? I mean, you're not going to be here in a few days. The Sefer Torah, we go into the Aron Kodesh, when are they going to use it? I mean, this is after Monday morning. By Thursday, it may not be here. So the answer that people said is that we have to do what's right in the way we see in this world. We don't do Hashem's Cheshbonos. If Hashem has his plan, what he has planned. We're not gonna live our lives according to what we think Hashem may plan or has in plan for us. We have to do what's right. And right now what's right is we need a mikvah, we're finishing the mikvah. We need a Sefer Torah, we're putting a Sefer Torah. In the shul, which is probably about 3 times this size, there are about 300-400 people. And during the dedication of singing the Sefer Torah, we sang a song and we sang it over and over again, which is not usually very typical, for about an hour. Think about it, an hour, the same song. And the song that we sang was, the words come from the davening for Shoshana Yom Kippur and during Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuos. It's the beginning of the middle bracha of the silent prayer. Ata v'chartan mikol ha'amim, ahavta otanu, ratzita banu, ro'amtan mikol ha'shanot, kidashanu mitzvotecha, v'kiravtanu makim la'avotecha, v'shimcha ha'gadol v'kadosh enu karata. The tune, I'll translate in a second for those who didn't catch it. The tune is a very famous one. It's a very, very powerful upbeat song, and you can sing it over and over again. It's not hard to sing. And you think about 300-400 people singing it together with the Sefer Torah, with knowing what is about to happen, either maybe today, maybe later in the day, maybe tomorrow. Hashem chose us. He loves us. He wants us. He elevated us. Sanctified us with his mitzvahs, brought us close to him in his service of doing the Avodas Hashem, and his holy name is upon us. You know, Hashem enables things that could be very, very painful. Very painful. I can see the pain that my parents have, and obviously the pain that people went through with the Holocaust. You know, my father, I had never seen him cry before this happened with my brother. His father died, his mother died, never saw him cry. After my brother was killed, I've seen my father cry numerous times since then. Sometimes things are very, very painful. But Hashem chose us and he loves us. And he wants us close to him. This is something which, I mean, if we drill it into our minds, terrible things in our eyes could happen. I mean, what happened in Gush Katif, the destruction of Gush Katif, the Holocaust, destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the terrorist attack. I mean, it's a small thing compared to the others, but these are all things which are very, very hard. But with all that, Hashem loves us. He wants us close to him. And his holy name is upon us. Do you know what does that mean? So Rabbi Akiva, he said the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The people that are in this shul, they literally had Hashem's name upon them. The tefillin that they were wearing has the shame of Hashem. And there's a pasuk that says, V'ra'u kol ha'aretz k'shem Hashem nikra lecha ve'ra'u me'ka, that all the nations of the world will see that Hashem's name is upon you, and they'll be scared of you, they'll fear you. It's talking about tefillin. That's what Chazal taught us. That in the time of David HaMelech, the soldiers went to war with tefillin on their heads. Literally, Hashem's name was upon them when this happened. And this is a message that I think is even, it's something that we as a Jewish nation have to internalize. That Hashem really does love us. It doesn't mean that things aren't painful. Sometimes things hurt. But Hashem wants us close to Him. Hashem wants this connection between us. And I told my son, if at the Mishmer they sing this song, then you can be part of it. So he said, but how can I can't force them to sing this song. They said, I'll call the Rosh Hashiva. I called up the Rosh Hashiva and I told him the whole story. And he said, he agreed with me 100%. He said, this is the song for this Mishmer, during this Shiva. This is the right time and the right song for the right then and there. We now can take this day. We fast, and I'm telling you this personally, sometimes fast days pass by, and right, I fast, I wait the whole day, just wait until the clock can finish and eat that day. Or we can decide to take this day and say, you know what, I'm stopping, I'm taking a break, I'm going to think about my life, I'm going to think about what can I do differently, not changing my whole life, because that's a very hard thing. If you can, gesunt ahead, but even the small things, where can I make a difference in the small things? That, I think, is the best response to the terrorist attack. And what we need as a nation, obviously, and this is something which the Sinas Chinam, which caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that's one thing we can always work on, all of us, that we can change, maybe can bring the rebuilding of Beis HaMikdash. I want to tell you one quick short story, and I know it's been a bit more, but one quick short story about in the Shiva, which can also tell us, you know, avas chinam means true, in a sense where I'm in awe. You know, the great people are measured by how they relate to the small people, right? How they relate to the people who are less important than them. Rav Lau, the Rav Ashi, chief rabbi of Israel, the son. I mean, there's the father. Both the father and the son came, but the son came to Shiva. Spoke with the men for a good half an hour, then he went to speak to the women. And while he was speaking to the women, my sister-in-law, Yaakova, her son, the youngest son, Yoshua, he's 6-year-old, he was sitting on her lap, and he was like pulling her sleeve, trying to get her attention. Obviously wanted to say something, but she was like trying to push him aside, like I'm in the middle of talking to her, like the chief rabbi is here, like he's trying to. Rav Lau told her, Yoshua wants to say something, let him say it, see what he wants. So they asked him, what is it? What is it that what's bothering you? He has a shayla for the Rav. He has a question. He wants to ask the Rav. Chief Rabbi is there. He wants to ask him a question. What's the question? He didn't want to eat that day because he knocked tefillin over and caused him to fall on the floor. So he decided he's not eating that day. And so the people, I mean, during the morning, wanted him food. He refused to take anything to eat. A 6-year-old child. So he asked Rav Lau, what do I need? I want to know, what do I need to do? Do I need to fast or not? So Rav Lau says, all right, he starts asking him, where were the tefillin? Were they inside the velvet wrapping, in the plastic, inside the plastic that holds them, the button? And he's going on and he's having a discussion, like a good 5 minutes back and forth. At some point, do you know who's the tefillin, whose they were? And so one of the people who was standing, one of the women standing by says, I'm sure we can find out for him. So Rav Lau says to them, I am now having a discussion with Yoshua. It's a discussion between me and him, and he's going to answer. Like, total, like, you're talking about a 6-year-old and the chief rabbi of Israel. And he went through the whole thing with him, and he told him, man, you don't have to fast, but you need to find out whose tefillin it was. And he said, he asked him at some point, did it have a tass with it or not? He said, it wasn't without a tass. He said, it's probably one of your brothers or one of your cousins who are not married. Because if it was somebody married, you usually have a tass with the tefillin. He said, so find out after the shiva, just make sure that they check it, that nothing happened to the tefillin, that they're okay, they're not damaged or anything. The small actions, the small things are where we're really measured. I mean, I hope that all of us, at the point where we're standing in front of a chatzchila, that shouldn't happen, we're standing but in front of the question of dying like Kiddush Hashem, we'll do it like Rabbi Akiva and like the other Kedoshim. I hope we never have to reach that. That we should zoche, that in the tiny things of every single day, we should be able to do the Kiddush Hashem. Thank you for your name. If anybody wants to ask me a question, I'll be around here if you want to.
Thank Rav Kupinski for sharing words of Torah and inspiration. As you just said, if anybody has any specific questions privately, want to come over and ask, please do so. Again, thank you very much for taking the time. Very inspiring. If anybody wants to come over, please do so.